Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The federal government is a major owner of this company by the actions that the Federal Reserve and others took to put up the money. We're the owners. We're not just the regulators. I believe we have a right to say, as the people who in effect own the company, no, you didn't earn a bonus.
Congressman Barney Frank, chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, making an interesting suggestion yesterday. I really did think that was interesting about the AIG bonuses. Since we, the taxpayers, own 80% of the company now, with bailouts nearing $200 billion of our dollars, why not try to undo the bonuses as the owner rather than as the regulator? Here's another question I have that maybe someone will answer during the program this morning, because we'll do several AIG segments. These are retention bonuses, meaning so people don't leave the company. But why weren't these executives in the credit default swaps division of AIG fired for failing at their jobs rather than bribed so they wouldn't leave? So we'll stay on the AIG story in a couple of ways this morning. Later, we will listen in on the testimony of their CEO, Ed Liddy, who is being brought before Congress this morning. And we will get a unique perspective right now from the former governor of New York, Eliot Spitzer, who forced the previous head of AIG to resign. Do you remember this? This was when he was New York State Attorney General and known as the Sheriff of Wall Street. He wrote a column on Slate.com this week called The Real AIG Scandal, and we'll find out what he thinks that is. Mr. Spitzer, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be chatting with you.
Take us back. Remind us of the history between you and this company. What put AIG in your sights as New York Attorney General?
Boy, this goes back a number of years, and we were approached by some sources who said that AIG, which was at the time guided by Hank Greenberg as CEO, was, to speak in street vernacular, juicing its books by creating false reinsurance contracts that would appear to add capital to its balance sheet. Now, that sounds all very complicated, but what it really means is that they were playing games with their accounting in order to look stronger than they were. And Hank Greenberg, and there are tapes that prove this, was very, very concerned with any even minor fluctuation in their stock valuation. And these contracts, it was alleged, were designed to make them look better in the eyes of Wall Street. We investigated, brought a case, a civil case, that led to a settlement of $1.4 billion. At the time, $1.4 billion seemed like a lot of money. It may not seem so much these days, given the numbers that are thrown around. It was the biggest financial settlement ever. The board removed Hank Greenberg because he invoked the Fifth Amendment on when he was asked about this. Four people were charged criminally and convicted for basically playing games, but it led us to inquire and probe into the inner workings of the company, and what we saw was a mess. And that was the first clue we had, and that's why I had, you alluded to it politely, you know, not a very pleasant dynamic between me and AIG back then, because right. I was saying this company is a problem.
Now, you wrote in your Slate column this week that part of AIG's business model, its actual business model, was to not pay claims on insurance that it had issued.
Right.
So I gather you don't mean life insurance claims. You mean these credit default swap policies that it had on big banks and their investments in securitized mortgages?
This was a company that when you speak to people in the street, and I know from personal conversations with senior managers, they did everything they possibly could to avoid paying, even when they had a clear obligation. And, you know, to a certain extent, they would say, well, that's how we do business. We're tough, and to some extent, you can accept that, but no, this was not a company that was willing to pay when it had an obligation to pay. It came to me on several occasions when I was Attorney General to try to get legal protection to avoid payment when it clearly should have paid. And we said, no, we don't play that game.
In what kind of cases? With these big banks?
This was a case. It was actually a payment of several hundred millions of dollars that it was obligated to make to a major New York City bank. And the policy they had entered into obligated them to make the payment. They didn't want to do it. And they said, even though they had accepted the premiums, had written the policy themselves, they didn't want to make the payment. And I said, no, you can't take one side of the bargain without another. And but the larger point here is that this company, when we as taxpayers, and Barney Frank in the segment that you played a few moments ago, Barney made the critically important point, we now own the company, but the big mistake that was made by those who negotiated our initial investment in the company is that we did not get with our capital investment adequate control over day-to-day operations. And they've done this over and over, and I think Barney's onto something. I've been saying it for a while. Why did we not get the rights that other shareholders get when you make a capital investment? When Warren Buffett buys into Goldman Sachs or GE or any other company, he not only gets preferred stock, he gets voting rights. We as taxpayers gave that away. And I do not understand why the federal government didn't say we want to be able to control issues such as pay, such as hiring.
So let's go a little deeper on that, because you write in your column, and if you're just joining us, yes, you recognize that voice. He is former New York Governor Eliot Spitzer, who went after AIG when he was the sheriff of Wall Street as New York Attorney General. You say the real AIG scandal is not the bonuses, but the payments in full to the counterparties that AIG does business with.
Correct.
Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase. You mean our AIG bailout money is really even more for these banks?
In essence, the numbers are just astronomical. The initial payment was $80 billion, then there have been subsequent payments bringing it up to about $183 billion, which, to put it in perspective, is larger by significant percentage than the entire budget of the state of New York for a fiscal year. But most of that money, was AIG was a conduit. It was given to AIG, and AIG then shipped it on through to other firms, the ones you just listed. And so my question is, when the group got together, and as we best understand it, it was Mr. Bernanke and Tim Geithner and Hank Paulson and Lloyd Blankfein, I think, was there as well, the CEO of Goldman. When they got together last fall and decided very, very quickly that AIG needed the $80 billion, why did they make that determination? That is the issue Congress should be probing. The bonuses, yes, they matter, but they're penny ante compared to this money. Why, if they knew that that money was going to go back to Goldman and B of A and Morgan Chase, did they need it? What were they getting the money for, and what was the premise that made them pay that money up front?
So if this is the real AIG outrage and costing the taxpayers so much more money than these bonuses, why are Barney Frank and President Obama and everyone else focusing like a laser beam on the bonuses?
Well, look, bonuses are the flavor of the month. You can't you hear the word bonus, you see a word bonus in a headline, somebody gets a subpoena 2 minutes later. And it's, to a certain extent, this is typical political screaming and shouting and missing the larger issue. Yes, Wall Street pay was wildly out of control. Again, for years I was talking about that. The DeGrasso case, you may remember, that was really the case that should have been pursued, and that's another story, but he was given $139 million to run a not-for-profit. Put that aside.
That was the New York Stock Exchange.
New York Stock Exchange. When he was supposed to be regulating it, but that's, again, a separate set of issues. The issue now is, how do we restore the economy? Why is taxpayer money going through AIG to these very large investment banks that are sitting on vast sums of cash that have adequate capital, and that money is not being used as it should be used for the sorts of stimulus investments that could actually get our economy going?
In fact, those very banks are saying to the government now, we don't need any more of your money.
Precisely.
And yet they're getting it through third-party payments from AIG.
And so they are sitting on enormous piles of cash, which may or may not make sense from their perspective, but from a taxpayer perspective, you have to wonder, why was that payment made?
But do you disagree that the AIG bailout is necessary, that precisely because they are so intertwined with the big banks and owe this money on their toxic assets, that if AIG were allowed to fail like Lehman Brothers, the whole financial world would really collapse way beyond what we've even seen so far?
Here's my answer to that. And let's go back to where we were last fall, right after Lehman had failed, which is, I think, almost universally viewed as having been a policy error. You'd had Bear Stearns, you then had Lehman on the cusp, and I think what really happened is that Washington said, we have to show that somebody can fail, that we won't bail everybody out. And the whole discussion of too big to fail is again, a separate discussion. I think policy was fundamentally flawed to let these banks get that big without putting real constraints upon them. Either you're too big to fail and we regulate you, or we break you up so you're not too big to fail. You can't have it both ways, too big to fail without the regulation.
Right. But are they now, in fact, too big to fail for the good of America?
Parts of AIG needed to be preserved. Some of these contracts needed to be stabilized. You couldn't have another credit crisis such as that which resulted right after Lehman failed. But that doesn't mean that you write a check for $173 billion, 100 cents on the dollar, to cover all of these contracts.
Right. They could be getting 80 cents on their dollar
or
to cover their contract
the
or something.
Precisely.
Now, when you were looking at AIG's books as New York State Attorney General, and this was what, 2002, 2003?
No, I think it was after that. I think it was 2004 and 2005,
okay.
If I remember.
Did you see the credit default swaps and the outsized risk that they represented?
We were not looking at that part of the company. We were looking at their reinsurance contracts with Gen Re, but what we saw was a company, when you peeled back the first layer of the onion, that was without anything close to adequate controls and adequate structure to know what was going on. The way they put their financials together was something that was absolutely beyond what was acceptable, which is why they paid a fine of $1.4 billion.
And it didn't jump out at you. I mean, if you, this was 2005, 2006. This was the height of the credit default swap era already beginning, right?
We were looking at the reinsurance piece of it, and we pushed and pushed at that. The credit default swap issue was simply not in our line of sight at the time. Obviously, it is something that has exploded since then. It was, as a regulatory matter, something that was being framed at the Fed and elsewhere. And obviously, everybody, including us, we should have said, stop. Now, the issue of overarching leverage in our society was something that everybody was looking at saying, this has gone crazy.
Former Governor Eliot Spitzer, my guest on WNYC. Remember, he went after AIG, got the biggest civil settlement in U.S. history from them, forced the old CEO, Hank Greenberg, out, so he has unique knowledge of this situation. And the Wall Street Journal lead editorial yesterday went after you and actually blamed you for kicking off the AIG crisis and the housing crisis even. It said, and let me read this, the housing trouble began, as most of AIG's troubles did, when the company's board buckled under pressure from then New York Attorney General Eliot Spitzer, when it fired longtime CEO Hank Greenberg. Almost immediately, Fitch took away the company's AAA credit rating, which allowed it to borrow at cheaper rates. A lower credit rating meant the firm would likely have to post more collateral to trading counterparties. But rather than managing risks even more carefully, they went in the opposite direction. Tragically, they did what Mr. Greenberg's AIG never did, bet big on housing. So they blame you for putting the company in this position when they had what the Journal considers a responsible CEO and forced them to do something to cover the losses that you caused.
Right. Well, you know, the Journal editorial page has been wrong, I would say, in just about every issue out there, and I hope nobody relies upon them to make important life decisions. They are blaming, it's akin to blaming the doctor who discovers the cancer and saying, if you hadn't discovered it, it wouldn't have been there. When we looked at the books, as I've told you, they were a mess, and the board of extremely wise individuals and notable individuals in the hierarchy of American business and politics looked at Hank Greenberg and said, no, this is not the way to run a company, and we have seen what has happened as we have needed to work through the resulting problems. The company, when we looked at it, was in deep trouble, and the finances continued to get worse. Absolutely, because they were following the policies that had been put in place while he was there. And the editorial page is always looking for a scapegoat. They have never yet been able to accept that any of the CEOs whom they liked made any errors in judgment.
I'm going to press you one more step on this, because the editorial also said AIG's restatement of earnings at the time addressed alleged accounting sins that Mr. Spitzer trumpeted initially but later dropped from his civil complaint, unquote. In other words, they're saying you bullied out the responsible Hank Greenberg on trumped-up charges that you never even tried to actually prove. And a lot of Wall Street thinks that.
No, what happened in fact is that the company agreed to pay the fine, restated its earnings. It had no controls that were adequate. Our complaint alleged all of that. There were tapes and overwhelming evidence that proved our case. Four people went to jail because of it. He was called, he being Hank Greenberg, by a federal prosecutor in the criminal case, an unindicted co-conspirator in that precise set of facts. Now, the larger reality is that the company itself was not being managed in a way that the board could tolerate, which is why the board, independent of our judgment, asked him to leave after he had invoked the Fifth Amendment. And so that was what happened. And again, that historical record will speak for itself. And the Wall Street Journal editorial page, I think everybody should keep in mind, it speaks to an ideology that is precisely the ideology of the last 10 years that got us to where we are. Never wanting a regulatory framework that would require either adequate capital, reasonable controls, or an examination of the types of remarkably outsized risks that we are talking about. So, and so I think you have a clear ideological choice to be made here, either the Wall Street Journal editorial page or the one that I think we're all now gravitating towards, which is sound, reasonable regulation.
But again now, and you talk about sound, reasonable regulation and the Obama administration, I guess, again now it's the New York State Attorney General who's really pressuring AIG on the bonuses. Andrew Cuomo discovered these bonuses and told Barney Frank, which is raising the question, where was Tim Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, who was head of the New York Fed at the time? Is Geithner asleep at the wheel or maybe two in the Wall Street tank?
Tim, along with Mr. Bernanke and Hank Paulson and Lloyd Blankfein, who were all there, need to answer some real questions about why they made those initial judgments. And I think that those questions, as I said in my article yesterday, I laid them out. And I said they should be answered in public very quickly about the initial decisions, what was known about who the counterparties were, who were the beneficiaries going to be of these payments, because that needs to be understood in terms of evaluating the wisdom of their judgments. Tim has got to answer those questions, and I think that should be done very quickly.
By the way, can you answer the other question that I posed at the top of the segment, which is these are retention bonuses, the bonus part,
right?
Meaning so people don't leave the company. But why weren't these executives who were specifically in this credit default swap division of AIG fired for failing at their jobs rather than bribed so they wouldn't leave?
Well, I guess my answer to that is if I had to make a judgment right now, I'd put you in as the CEO of the company so you could do precisely that.
I decline. Unqualified. You know, highly unqualified.
As I understand it, only pays a buck a year right now. But your point, and if you give me just 10 more seconds on this, there is a sense in corporate America at the top that individuals become indispensable and are then paid to based upon that premise. It's not right. And especially when you look at the record that we now have before us and you see the egregious misjudgments that have been made, your question is precisely the right question, which is why do we want them in the first place? Aren't there other people who can come in either to unwind the contracts that they have put in place or to make better judgments going forward?
Now, before you go, some of the commenters on our website are angry at us for even having you on. They ask, can't we find any other expert to talk with about ARG besides the disgraced former governor and things like that? To those listeners, we're having lots of AIG-related guests this week. We chose Mr. Spitzer for one perspective because of the unique history between him and the company when he was the only government entity really giving them a hard time. But, Mr. Spitzer, it was a year ago yesterday that you left office. How do you feel now about having taken yourself out of the position of being more directly involved with all this?
Well, I am obviously disappointed in what led to that. I've apologized and in my view, have acted in the past year the way I should have, which is to say I will remain quiet and others will step in and hopefully pursue these issues, whether it's the MTA refinancing or AIG investigations, and continue to move forward. I, like others, also am disappointed at what I have seen in terms of public policy in these domains. And as you suggested, there was a number, there was a period when, as Attorney General of New York, I was pursuing issues that nobody else wanted to pursue. And we pursued AIG and Wall Street structural failures in a way that others shied away from because it was politically unpalatable for them to address those issues. Now it is the flavor of the month. Everybody's jumping up and down, serving subpoenas and beating their chests, trying to be tougher than the next person. That's wonderful. But I think, as you say, there was a moment when that was not the case. And so perhaps I can add a slightly different perspective if I can. I'm happy to try to add it.
And you said you would stay quiet, but you're not totally staying quiet. You are a Slate columnist. You've been writing for them regularly. Maybe some people will question their judgment in hiring you for that. But are you trying to kind of make a comeback as a media person?
No, I am simply trying to add a few words occasionally as I best can to shed light on some very vexing policy problems that are out there that have not been addressed necessarily in the best possible way by our leadership, and we all have to work together to do what we can do to move forward. And to the extent that writing a few columns and adding my perspective can help, I'm thrilled to do that and help in any way. I think that's what we all owe it to our society.
All right. Elliot Spitzer, thanks a lot for coming on with
Thank
us.
You.
I appreciate it. Now we're going to listen to a clip of these hearings, which have just started, with the CEO of AIG, Ed Liddy. Next hour, we will hear some extensive clips of Liddy. But right now, Congressman Scott Garrett from New Jersey was speaking just a minute ago. He's on the committee, and he was going on less about AIG paychecks and more about these systemic questions of the loan money in the first place that Elliot Spitzer was also discussing.
Part of me wants to say some of the loudest critics, what did you expect, and why weren't you asking more questions before? I would argue that the real outrage now is the $170 billion of taxpayer monies that has been pumped into this company, and to what effect. So I realize that recent events have now, to some extent, overtaken this hearing, but there are some other issues to explore as well.
All right, some introductory remarks from New Jersey Congressman Scott Garrett. The Ed Liddy testimony itself is beginning, and we will play some excerpts after he's said enough stuff to turn around. Coming up next, WNYC's Bob Henley digs up dirt on the Xanadu project, bogging down in the Meadowlands.